Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Countdown to Kickoff. I am your host, Anthony Denmark, Denmark Like the Country, a.k.a. Copenhagen, a.k.a. Denny. And this episode is brought to you by EatDrinkSleepSports.com. And since sports never stops, since sports never sleeps, that means we always have something to talk about. And since Mason's back, heck, I'm back, you're back, let's go ahead and discuss the latest happenings in the world of college sports. Let's get it. And welcome back to Countdown to Kickoff. Boy, was week 11 a season, a week to remember. It was definitely filled with excitement, upsets beyond compare. And, of course, we do know that when upsets happen, we at least see some changes in the ranking. However, we see that it actually may not be the case. Again, welcome to Countdown to Kickoff. We have a lot of things on tap for today's show. We're going to be breaking down the rankings, the Week 3 college football playoff rankings. We're going to share the reaction, assess each team's chances of being the last, the 1-4. Because at this particular point, although we are in the third year of the college football playoffs, we still really do not know how they go about selecting. We're going to talk to him about West Virginia, who are currently slotted at number 14. They moved up from 16 to 14 to talk about his reaction to the college football playoff rankings. We know that wins matter, but which wins matter? Do Big 12 wins matter? Do Pac-12 wins matter? These all appear to be valid questions. In addition to that, do quality losses matter too? Well, we're going to tackle all of that on today's show because it seems as if these are definitely going to be questions that are going to have to be answered. And based off of what the committee has told us so far, we still really do not have much of a clear picture. So, let's go ahead and get our guest on the line. He writes for HaleWestVirginia.com to share his reactions, his expectations, and his thoughts about this latest batch of rankings. Let's go ahead and get him on the line. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. Now, of course, you know, everybody was waiting for the rankings to come out. I know college basketball is going on, and the game between Kentucky and Michigan State was not really much of an entertaining thing to watch, but we got the rankings, and we see in the rankings that we have one SEC team in the top 10 and one Big 12 team in the top 10, but it is not West Virginia. What were your thoughts and reaction to that blatant show of disrespect to West Virginia?
I mean, you said it, and it happens every year. West Virginia always seems to get snubbed. I don't know why. In the past, I could see why the Big East wasn't that tough of a conference. They moved to, in my opinion, a very tough conference in the Big 12, and it always seems like the Big 12 gets snubbed, especially West Virginia. I'm not surprised at all that an SEC team is in the top 10. They always seem to dominate the top 10. They are the conference is beat, in my opinion, but the Big 12 always seems to get snubbed. Actually, my latest post that will be posted here very soon is how the Big 12 always gets snubbed. West Virginia with a big quality win over Texas, even though it was only by 4 points, only moving up 2 spots. That's just blatant show of disrespect, even when everyone on ESPN is talking about them being, you know, a favorite and running in that table. And I know Oklahoma can win. Or clinch the Big 12 with a win over West Virginia, but it is going to be a better game than most depict. And I think if they do win that game, and if they only move up a couple spots and they don't move further into the top 10, I mean, it just shows that, like you said, blatant disrespect.
Again, I'm on the line with Michael Bonaventure. He's a writer for HaleWestVirginia.com. Now, of course, we do know that at the end of the day, we do know coach speak is saying that you handle the game that's in front of you. You let the other stuff take place as it may. So we do have a big matchup, and I mean, the one thing that is definitely promising is at least, unlike Louisville, there are ranked teams still left for West Virginia to play. And that offense by Oklahoma, at this particular point, they have the nation's leading receiver and the quarterback, Baker Mayfield, actually has the nation's highest quarterback QBR, thanks largely to Jake Browning's bad performance against USC. So what do you see posing a potential problem? Because it seems as if no defensive back has been able to at least cover D.D. Westbrook, even when he had a strained hamstring.
The passing game is definitely going to be the biggest obstacle for West Virginia. Obviously, like you said, they got two of the leading players on the offensive side, receiving and the quarterback position, especially in the QBR. West Virginia's secondary has seemed to be suspect as of late. They always give up the big play when it seems like they shouldn't. They always seem to make the big play, too, as well, when the time matters. With West Virginia, their defense at 3-3-5, it is unorthodox. It does seem to give some teams some trouble, but I see them having a very big day in the passing game, Oklahoma, against West Virginia's defense, as much as I hate to say that, being a big West Virginia fan and a writer for them. They do need to tighten up their defense, definitely tighten up their secondary. Those DBs do need to fly around and not get caught watching the quarterback when they should be watching their man.
Absolutely. Now, of course, you look into this game, and for me, I look specifically at the run game. And to be honest with you, low-key or at least unnoticed by the nation is West Virginia may have one of the most talented secondaries in the country. Number 13 is just a beast. Overall, I look at the defensive line. Last week against Texas, they gave up 167 yards rushing to Gunther Foreman. Now they got another. They got two big beasts that they have to deal with. They had trouble with one in Foreman. Now you got Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine. And I say to myself, man, it could be a long day.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be a long day for the Mountaineers. They definitely need to really hone in on all their skills and really get back to the basics when it comes to that defensive line. They got to get pressure. They got to get in the face of that quarterback. They got to stop the run. And one thing every coach will tell you is when you get back to the basics, you got to wrap up the ball carrier. I know everyone's looking for that big hit and that flashy. I want to be on ESPN's top 10 countdown with the big hit. But you got to wrap up. If you play fundamental football and you really focus on your play, your position, and just knowing what you're supposed to do and what the guy behind you is supposed to do, it should make for a very easy day for the Mountaineers if they stick to the fundamentals and play their game. The 3-3-5 can make it hard for teams to run on them, but like you said, they did give it up to one. They got two real monsters to deal with Oklahoma. They've always seemed to have a good running game. West Virginia should know that, being in the Big 12 a couple years now. Having to face Oklahoma, they know that this running game isn't anything to take lightly. I think now that they're starting to notice that this is a big game, and every game from here on out is a big game for them. They are close to clinching the Big 12, which I am excited to hear that they are going to a championship game here in the coming years. So that is something that is positive, that it's not just a sure winner anymore, and top two teams will play for a championship game like all the other conferences seem to do. The big power conferences. So, you know, dealing with that big running game is definitely going to be a challenge, and it's probably going to open up the passing game for them. Like you said, that's probably the reason for the success for Oklahoma's passing game is because they're all worried about those two monsters in the backfield.
Absolutely. Now, of course, we know two things are certain. That's what we've learned from both Oklahoma and West Virginia. Is that when people want to be good, they often find themselves choking. That's what we saw so far. And when people don't expect West Virginia to be good, they find themselves being able to make believers out of everybody. And I look at that as saying that only one of these two things could find itself being true after Saturday. It appears as if not many people are giving West Virginia much of a shot in this game, which I think, yet again, is another show of blatant disrespect. Because their defense has been absolutely phenomenal. And Mike Stoops, let's be real, he hasn't done much to stop any type of offense as a defensive coordinator for Oklahoma. So what do you see as being the keys for West Virginia being able to pull an upset and finally get at least a slither of respect nationally that I think that they so much more well deserve?
They definitely deserve the respect nationally with the way they played this season. If you look back in some of my earlier posts, I didn't expect them to be this high in the Big 12. I predicted them being middle of the road like they have been the past couple of years. They are surprising a lot of people, including myself. They do come through when no one expects them to. I didn't expect them to beat Texas. They came through. They pulled through at the end, won by 4, 24-20. No one's giving them a chance to win against Oklahoma. Everybody that I've listened to, everyone that I've talked to, has said that Oklahoma, this isn't even going to be a game, and people are probably turning the game off at halftime. That's just fueling the Mountaineers' fire to prove everybody wrong. They seem to be the David versus the Goliath of the NCAA, and we all know how that story ends.
Absolutely. Now, of course, we do know this game definitely promises to be an exciting one. Although, of course, I'm sure West Virginia does not like its place in the rankings. We do know that rankings change. We saw that happen with TCU going from 3-7, and if, in fact, they could go from 3-7, it's very possible for West Virginia, if, in fact, they take care of business against Oklahoma, they can also find themselves reemerging back in the conversation. Thank you so much for coming on to the show, and I definitely want to have you on after the Mountaineers pull yet again another upset. Thank you so much.
Not a problem, man, anytime.
Now, of course, one of the things that's awesome is at times in college football, we have a tendency to find ourselves falling victim to the names on the front of the jerseys. And at times do a significant amount of disrespect to a lot of other programs who are just as talented and also just as deserving of an opportunity to find themselves vying for a chance to contend and play for a national championship. We've seen this story happen before. Do know that you do have to take care of the games in front of you. We do know that if, in fact, West Virginia had maybe, I don't know, maybe beaten Oklahoma State on October 29th, they wouldn't find themselves in the situation. But the other thing that often happens is we find ourselves not giving people their just due opportunities. After Ohio State lost to Penn State, nobody said that they're out of the national championship conversation. Based off of the rankings that we saw tonight, Clemson, Michigan, Washington still find themselves yet again still in the conversation. But for some reason, teams like West Virginia, who suffer a loss, are automatically no longer qualified, no longer legitimate, no longer valid or talented enough to be able to contend and play on the big stage with the so-called big boys, with the so-called name brand programs. And for me, that's just a whole bunch of disrespect. However, at the end of the day, you have to ultimately end up perform and handle the business that you have in front of you. Although TCU, another team that was disrespected because of their lack of tradition, because of their lack of name branding, did not get a chance to play for the national championship in their performance in the Cotton Bowl against Ole Miss. Their play demonstrated that not only was it a straight blasphemy that they were not allowed to play in it, but it also sent a huge message to the College Football Playoff Committee that, hey, you have to look at the production on the field and not just look at the tradition, the boosters, and all the things that oftentimes find so-called mid-major programs disqualified almost immediately. But again, as I say in life, as I say in sports, ladies and gentlemen, we're definitely going to see what's happening, and we're definitely going to see what's up. Now, when you look at these rankings, one of the things that's often interesting is you find a lot of other confounding variables. Like I said in the opening of the show, I really don't know what matters anymore. You know, we're now in this time in our country where everybody's saying certain things matter, certain colors matter. But I'm really trying to understand which wins matter. I'm really trying to understand which losses matter. Because it seems as if each team, each program is conveniently making the argument that best
benefits them. And I'm truly wondering what's going on in the college football committee meetings. Because if wins matter, right, then Washington should still be in the conversation because they, although their schedule is 128th, which means that they're last, yes, last in the entire NCAA, but they do have an opportunity to end their season potentially playing three ranked teams. So if wins matter, then those wins should matter. And if losses matter, if Michigan lost to a team who only had four wins, who only happened to lose to a FCS team, shouldn't that loss matter? I mean, I'm just saying, and if in fact you're Ohio State and you lost to a team in Penn State that got blown out by over 30 points to Michigan, does that loss matter? And if we're going to continue this discussion, if the only loss that you have on your schedule is to a team that just so happened for a national championship, does that quality loss matter more than a quality win against a Rutgers or a Maryland? We can continue these theories on and on and on and on and on. But continuing our conversation, one of the other highlights of the rankings is we see another team that made it into the top 10, another team who stayed patient with their coach, gave him an opportunity to build his program. I'm talking about Coach Mack, not from Florida, but the Coach Mack who probably be the next Pac-12 Coach of the Year in Colorado, who has his team at number 10. So let's go ahead and get Jeff Hauser on the line. He writes for the Colorado Buffs to find out what his thoughts, reactions, expressions, opinions are about where the Buffs are currently ranked in the college football playoff ranking. Let's get him on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much. Now, we see that, I mean, what a difference a year makes. Colorado went from possibly firing his coach to now being in a position where they're going to be hosting the first game between two top 25 teams since 2004. My, how things have changed.
Oh, yeah, things have definitely changed. And, you know, covering this team over the long haul, I can definitely say that it's a much different atmosphere. I mean, when Coach Mack got on campus he was hired in 2012. His first season was 2013. You know, he took over a program that was very much – it cast in some very deep shadows. I mean, all the way going back to the days of Gary Barnett when they had the sex abuse scandal, it was just the program had – some down years. And then to see Coach Mack come in and get his guys, and we're not talking the kids that he has in his program are not guys who were recruited very heavily. You know, he has instilled a winning attitude. I mean, he went to some places that other coaches didn't go to get his type of quality players. And he has turned this team into a team of, you know, not really playmakers. I mean, they do have their fair share of playmakers, but we're talking guys who just go out and they play team football. I mean, kudos to Coach Mack for what he's done in Boulder, and it's been very exciting to watch through the years. And just a side note, what I want your listeners to understand is, you know, when Coach Mack stepped foot on campus in Boulder, he didn't have a full football team. He had to go around campus and recruit guys and say, hey, do you want to be a part of my team, and this is what I can offer you, and this is what I can do for you? I mean, he literally had to do that. He didn't have enough players to even fill the full roster. And that to me, just shows the mark of a guy who has turned around a program from once being a one-win team to now we're talking about them being a top-10 team and possibly have an outside shot at the college football playoff.
Absolutely. Again, I'm talking to Jeff House. He writes for the Colorado Buffs. Speaking of the college football playoff, the rankings came out tonight. The Buffalo found themselves ranked number 10, and they still have a lot of other great games left on their schedule. I had a prior caller on. We talked about the Big 12 and the lack of disrespect. You definitely can't say that about the Pac-12, as they have a lot of teams in the top 25. I want to ask you, what do you see as Colorado's path to possibly being in the top four? Because you still got, you got Washington State Saturday, and then after that you may find yourself having another team to play in the Pac-12 championship. And, I mean, it seems as if there is a path. There is a chance.
Oh, there's definitely a chance, and there's definitely a path. I mean, they have the number two, 22, excuse me, Washington State on Saturday, and then the following Saturday, which is Senior Day, they have number 11 Utah. And if they win those two games, they will win the Pac-12 South and vie themselves into the Pac-12 championship. Now, what really helps them out with this latest and most current playoff ranking is when you look at the teams. Well, when you look at CU's resume, I mean, you're talking about a very hotly contested CU team who they're one of just a handful of teams who have two ranked opponents. In fact, in the top 15, there's two teams that have two ranked opponents here coming down to the wire in the last 2 weeks. One is the number 9 Oklahoma Sooners. The other one is the number 10 Colorado Buffaloes. Now, if CU can win, they're in. And that's been the story of their season just in the last couple weeks. Don't know what the outlook may be for them. Now, keep in mind, if they do beat Washington State this weekend, it's very likely that they're going to play Washington in the Pac-12 championship, which the Huskies just suffered the loss to USC, just as such that CU lost to USC earlier in the season, as well as You look at their resume. They lost to what was then number 4, the Michigan, now being number 3 playoff ranked, the Michigan Wolverines. So you're talking about a CU team that has suffered two very quality losses. Their wins have been very quality. And then they had a win over number 24 Stanford, who gets added to this playoff. And CU has played the most playoff teams out of any playoff ranked team in this most current ranking, and that's very, very good and outstanding. And if they can win the next three games against all ranked opponents, that will give them a really good shot, an outside shot, to go to the committee and say, well, now we're Pac-12 champions. Our last three games, we just beat ranked opponents. Where do we stand? And I think that would give them a really, really good shot compared over teams of, say, I mean, you look over in to the other conferences. I mean, if we're looking that far ahead, the Big 12 definitely has their share of controversy, having only 10 teams. They didn't expand. And now, I mean, they are going to play a game for a championship where years past they didn't. And the muddy waters there have just kind of been very, very, very convoluted.
Absolutely, and that definitely, you know, we have at least three more weeks to see how everything makes sense of everything. Now, I do want to say two things. Again, I'm on the line with Jeff Houser. He writes for the Colorado Buffs. Now, I do want to say two things. Now, for me, one of the things that I've really liked specifically about the Colorado Buffaloes is that they've been led by their senior leadership, and it's been truly remarkable. And for me, one of the things that really stuck out to me was the leadership and the fight of a guy who I initially thought was just a Mr. Nice guy, Stefo Lupau, who I remember helping Michigan players up after they sacked him. And it seems as if this guy has finally gotten his edge. And I like the edge that I saw with him against UCLA. And it seems as if his team has really rallied behind him. And he's finally healthy. And I'm really looking at this guy as being one of those quarterbacks who has the senior leadership, the talent, the ability to make CU a huge threat to possibly not only make it to the Rose Bowl, but have some dreams and aspirations of their own.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Having covered Cepho from almost his entire college career, in fact, the little bit that I didn't get to see of his college career was back when he was not starting. I mean, when Connor Wood was in, and then Connor left the team, and Cepho was thrown into the fold as a starter. I mean, you're talking about a guy in Cepho Lupau who has set 80 records at the University of Colorado, 8-0. Now, just to put that into perspective, there's only a few records that he has yet to break. In fact, he has a really good shot of breaking them in the next two games, one being touchdowns. I mean, he needs two touchdowns to have the most touchdowns in passing Cody Hawkins in school history, and most points accounted for. And he has a good chance to passing both those records, which would put him atop of every foreseeable record that Colorado has ever established. So he is Mr. Nice Guy, but he's also a hard competitor. He comes from the Tacoma, Seattle, Washington area, and he's very smart. He's a very willed quarterback and has been for his entire career. I mean, even 2 years ago, we were talking about Sefa Lufau, the guy who was giving up two touchdowns to every one interception, but his interceptions were just in inopportune times in the points of games. He really has turned that around, and just to watch him go through this fight and go through this struggle in the off season, I mean, CU goes out and they try to get two very well-known quarterbacks, of course, Jones from Tennessee and then Davis Webb, to really kind of throw into this system with new offensive coordinator Darren Shivarini. It just kind of shaped up to be that Sefa Lufau, you know, last year against USC, he breaks his foot. It's his Liz Frank, from what we find out, which is a very tough injury to come back from. Very, very tough. And we were told all along as media members that, you know, Sefa might not be out there, not even just for this season, but for the rest of his career. And there were times when you would watch his rehab and watch his progression, and it was a very, very tough process to watch him try and throw the ball again and, you know, go through these mental struggles. And I would see things from a different perspective. I'd see Sefa go out there and you would think that he would be the same quarterback. Well, he came back a lot stronger and has looked really good. I mean, even the interception that he threw this past weekend against Arizona, it was a tip ball, and it was only his, well, really for all foreseeable, it was his first interception of the season. So for what he has done for the CU offense, it is just great. And I mean, he's been a leader all the way through, and there's no doubt that he is the nucleus that has kept this team together. And I'm not so sure that if you keep him in the second half of that game against Michigan, if they don't compete wire to the wire to the fourth quarter.
I agree wholeheartedly. We definitely, we talked earlier this summer about the Colorado Buffs being a dark horse, but you know what? They're not a secret anymore. And we're definitely going to see how they finish out the season. And I definitely want to thank you and hope to have you on to continue to talk about the Buffs and their continued reemergence back into the national picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Now, wow. I mean, I recall when we spoke to Jeff this summer, we previewed the Colorado Buffs. We knew about Sefa Lufau. We didn't even really know specifically if Sefa Lufau was going to come back. There was actually talk that he was going to possibly even retire. Now look what this guy's doing. I mean, just think about it. We are entering into a golden era of quarterbacks. It's just not the type of quarterback from the type of chin quarterback in USC and Sam Darnold. We got an undersized quarterback in Jake Browning from Washington. You got Luke Falk throwing it all over the field in Pullman. You got Davis Webb, who's transferred up. I think I'll transfer again, doing his thing down there in Cal. You got, of course, but the guy who everybody thought was supposed to be the guy is not even the guy anymore, who's now sitting out, of course. I'm talking about the chosen one, the Rosen one. Man, at the start of the season, did we see any of this happening? I mean, really, did we see any of this happening? But one of the things that I wanted to talk about and the reason why I specifically targeted getting guests to come on from the Big 12 and the Pac-12 is it seems as if each year, each time we come across the time in which we're doing ranking, we have this love fest where we oftentimes grow comfortable with picking certain teams who, in our minds, are supposed to be there. Why on earth is Florida State still in the top 25? Why in the hell is Tennessee still in the top 25? Please, somebody, because we've grown comfortable with seeing certain teams be in the top 25. We expect that because they recruited certain players, because they come from certain conferences, because their coaches get paid a certain amount of money, that they find themselves belonging in the top 25. Nah. I just don't agree with that. Nevertheless, like, one of the things that we wanted to bring up, one of the focuses of this show tonight was about what matters here. Jeff just laid out Colorado's argument. You see the fact that the two games that they lost, Luke Fowl was hurt. Michigan was actually losing against Colorado. And although Jabril Peppers were doing dynamic things with that dynamic punt return before Sefo Lufau went out of the game, Colorado was running roughshod against them, up and down the field. Then he went down. Then he was hurt. And then they had to start Montez Wilson. And although he did not complete a freaking pass when put in against Michigan, he did, of course, improve. But, again, he did have to play USC. Sefo Lufau wasn't there. So you find yourself asking, people are sitting here having these conversations talking about Michigan and how to be able to grade and rate Michigan because Wilton Spate is either out with an injury, out for the season with an injury, undisclosed with an injury. We just know that he has a bad shoulder. But for some reason, those same arguments that we find ourselves making and while we still qualify Michigan for being still in the conversation, despite missing their starting quarterback, we say to yourself, does that argument not also apply to Colorado? The starting quarterback wasn't in against USC. They still almost won. The starting quarterback wasn't in against Michigan. And they lost. So what matters here? Do Pac-12 wins matter here? Far too often we find ourselves making things far too difficult than they have to be. Whoever wins the Pac-12 will have possibly played more ranked teams at the back end of their schedule. Michigan lost to Iowa with their starting quarterback. Michigan only collected 200 yards total offense against Iowa, the same team that got blown out by Penn State. You know, the same Iowa team, I again said, that lost to an FCS opponent in South Dakota State without Carson Wentz. So what matters here? Because I truly have no clue. And anybody else who sits here and tells you will be lying to you as well. Because at one point we used to just simply say that you would go by the eye test. But you're going to sit here and tell me that with the same eyes that you saw Iowa beat and bludgeon Michigan, the same eyes when you saw James Conner from Pittsburgh pretty much bully Clemson's defense into submission, warrants no change in their ranking. When you find yourself losing to a team that lost four games, team that lost three games, you're still the number two and number three team in the country? I don't know about you, but that makes no sense to me. Because I know Louisville was god-awful in the first half, but did you happen to see the second half of the game? Because if you were like me, I cut it off and said, ooh, what the hell, and then went on about my merry way. But then if I would have checked back in the game, I would have saw that Lamar Jackson reemerged. I would have saw that it appeared as if the defense scored a touchdown. Lamar Jackson handed the ball off to Radcliffe, who did his damn thing. And you say to yourself that eye test was not more impressive than watching Michigan lose to Iowa, who lost to an FCS team, or watching Washington running game completely get shut down against a USC team that allowed 62 points against Alabama. And you're going to sit here and say to me that, hey, oh, well, I just so happen to see the game, and, you know, Clemson, Michigan, I think they're still top four. One of the things that's important is to be able to take a snapshot of what that team is that week.
because I think in taking a snapshot of how those particular teams performed in Week 11, they didn't perform like a top 14. We forgot that they have a dynamic running back in Wayne Gallman, who he did declare for the draft for a reason, and maybe he should have actually got the ball as opposed to Deshaun Watson passing 70 freaking times. Maybe we just found out that Michigan just got exposed as a one-dimensional offense who only has one dynamic playmaker in regards to Jabril Peppers, who, of course, was ruled and deemed to be ineffective. Maybe we finally realize that if, in fact, Michigan finds itself playing against at least one cornerback who's going to find himself in the NFL and King, that those so-called wide receivers are really just possession wide receivers at best, and for some reason, Jake Butts did not get the ball, and he should have definitely gotten the ball. So what do you say to a team like, do we then foolishly say that Ohio State finds itself being number two in the country because, well, they played Rutgers, well, they played Maryland, and oh my goodness, they played a Nebraska team that everybody knew that was garbage. So that means that they're ranked the number two team in the country? Come on, man. We're not supposed to pick teams based off a default. How impressive is a win against Maryland? Is that really worth you being moved up in the rankings? Come on, man. How impressive is a loss against Iowa? Does that mean that you still stay in the top four, even though a team like Louisville ran roughshod against Wake Forest, a team that could probably beat Iowa? Come on, man. But you know what? Then you have to say to yourself, what are we looking at? Are we looking at things as they are now? Or are we trying to predict what things are going to be at the end of the season? Because when I look at the top four, I do see Alabama. I do see Ohio State. I do see Michigan. And I do see, who was number four? Clemson. And I do say to myself that, you know what? We do know that Ohio State and we do know that Michigan will eventually cancel each other out. We do know that for certain. Right? Right? Well, we sure as hell hope so, right? But then what happens after that? Clemson, of course, is going to beat Wake Forest because, you know what, Wake Forest has got bludgeoned by Louisville, and, of course, we know that Clemson, of course, now realize they have to do something, at least attempt to look respectable. Give Wayne Gallman the damn ball, please. And we do know, of course, that Washington, of course, may have gotten exposed, so we're going to see if, in fact, they do also realize that they have a great running back, the Pac-12 leading rusher in Gaskin, who, of course, got forgotten about. Jake Browning can throw the ball, but you know what? Gaskin can also run the damn ball. So what will happen? We are tuned in to see what happens. But which wins matter, man? Which wins matter? Well, you know, I think I pretty much eliminated every team besides USC, who, of course, in my opinion, is probably one of the top four teams in the country, but will find itself falling victim to the same thing that happened to Stanford. But that, of course, is a topic for another day. So which wins matter? Pac-12 wins, Big 12 wins, quality losses? Well, you know what? We got 3 weeks to find out the answers to all those questions. I want to thank Jess. I want to thank my other caller for calling in to share their insights from the perspective of Big 12 and Pac-12 writers. We got 3 weeks to find out what's happening, what's up. I want to thank you guys for listening to my show. Remember that sports gives you an opportunity to take a time off from life and all the things that have a tendency of stressing us out. Stay tuned to more upsets. I know I will. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Countdown to Kickoff. Our show airs live every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If, in fact, you missed the show, make sure you subscribe to the podcast by typing in count and the number 2 and down, one word. While you're at it, make sure you also follow the latest happenings in the world of sport with us at Eat, Drink, Sleep, Sports, and the number 2. And you know what? If you've gone that far, be sure and check out our website for the latest happenings as well at eatdrinksleepsports.com. Till next time, college sports football fans, stay tuned. I know I will. Peace.